Deshana on the 5th of September 1979. The Sasana Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is the most ideal way, unequal by any other way, both in the means and the end result. They are excellent and foremost. This is because the founder of the Sasana is the Lord Buddha. He is the best ideal that all sentient beings can take up as the heart's basis, and to practice following his way to the utmost of their ability. For his way is flawless and perfect. Speaking about putting in the effort, about perseverance and endurance, about resourcefulness, and about striving and struggling, and of being the master of himself, and the master of all of the Savaka Sangha. In all of this, the Lord Buddha is the foremost, unequaled by any other person. In striving, the Lord strove until he accomplished his task. In enduring and persevering, he sometimes passed unconscious. But he never relented in his striving. He excelled in everything, and eventually was able to attain to the penetration of all the Dhammas which are found within this world, and are the things that it is within the means of the world to realize and experience for themselves. By way of practice, following each individual capability. This is because the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is suitable and appropriate for all sentient beings which are of different categories, and they are called the Buddhist company. They are the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, which nowadays are being replaced by the samaneras, the upasikas, and the upasakas. They are the ones that are capable of receiving the teaching of the Lord Buddha. The term Sasada, or great teacher, refers to someone who is wise and discerning in the way of teaching other people. He knows what kind of Dhamma is suitable for what type of people. He doesn't teach anything which is beyond the ability of the sentient beings and Buddhist company to practice and experience for themselves. He is therefore the greatest Sasada in his ability to teach the world the Dhamma. Teaching human beings is one thing. Teaching to the bhikkhus is on one level, and teaching lay people and the general public is on another level. He taught to the lay people who practiced like the bhikkhus in the same way that he taught the bhikkhus themselves, with the Dhamma geared specifically to each individual practitioner according to their practical experiences and states of attainment. The Lord would explain and elucidate to a practitioner until he was fully satisfied and had his doubts and questions cleared away. Apart from teaching human beings, he also taught the devatas. Has anyone seen the devatas? Or is it a matter of taking in the knowledge and insight of the great teacher to suit one's views and understanding that is full of the excrement of the kilesas tanha and asava, which are the blinding influences, so that they conform to what we want to believe in. There are internal and external dhammas, coarse and subtle dhammas. The things that the Lord Buddha taught concerning the dhamma range from coarse to very subtle. There are coarse material substances or forms, and very subtle ones as well, like the celestial beings. For instance, that we have always heard and read about from the texts. The three divisions of the Pali Canon, the suttas, the Vinaya, and the Abhidhamma are equally truthful. There isn't a single chapter or verse in the Tripitaka that is fake or counterfeit Dhamma, because what has been taught was not faked. Thus, it cannot be said that the sasada of one aspect is truthful, while the sasada of another aspect is faked. This is not possible. This is because in teaching to the world, no sasada teaches the faked and the truthful Dhamma together. For this is the principle of Dhamma. If we are going to have any conviction, we should have conviction in the Lord Buddha. When the Lord Buddha taught to the Devatas, he taught them the Dhamma suitable to their state of mind and their state of being. This was similar to the way that he taught the human beings, because Dhamma is a common property. Whether it is the citta of a Brahma, or a Devata, or a human being, they all have varying degrees of subtlety and coarseness similarly, because the citta is Nama Dhamma, that can take up various forms. But some forms do not have complete and perfect faculties, like the animals, for instance. They are not capable of understanding the moral principle of what is good and what is evil. The Lord Buddha therefore did not teach to the animals, who could not perceive what is good or bad, and what is right or wrong, or what is heaven or hell, or what are the kilesas, tanha and asava, for they are ignorant of these things. Although every day of their life they have been committing these kinds of deeds, they do them without knowing themselves what it is that they are doing. But with human beings, we are capable of knowing these things. We are capable of learning the various aspects of Dhamma, like we are capable of learning and studying from the Tripitaka. Although not everyone is capable of doing this, there are some who can practice and learn the Dhamma. Therefore, the content of the three divisions of the Tripitaka is the complete and perfect Dhamma presented by the Lord Buddha. All the things that were written in the suttas, the Vinaya, or the Abhidhamma, are all the truth. But essentially, it is the citta that is the one who will receive all the things expounded by the Lord Buddha and experience them. Some cittas can perceive things through their eyes and ears, but are not capable of perceiving those things that must be perceived exclusively by the heart. And the hearts that can perceive and experience things that are experienced exclusively by the heart are numerous as well. And this is the way that the teaching of the Lord Buddha has to be classified for each specific state of mind. It is therefore a perfect ideal for the world to follow, be it in any aspect of the teaching. For instance, the application of one's energy and diligent effort, one's striving, one's endurance, and one's perseverance, and of being austere and thrifty-minded, of being heedful, of not going out of the way to mess around, of having discipline, and of having Dhamma as the control of the heart, so that it can establish a basis of itself. Then the heart can be grounded with Dhamma. Concerning these things, whether one is a lay person or a bhikkhu, one can take up these and observe and apply it in one's practice, and can come up with benefits and results. For this Dhamma is a common property that is applicable to everyone. For the bhikkhu, the application of one's diligent effort is in one's striving and exertion in the practice for the uprooting of the various kinds of kilesas, tanha and asava, by depending on one's endurance and perseverance. One must concentrate one's sati and panya into digging and searching out the kilesas, which are so deeply embedded within the heart, so that they can be totally destroyed and eliminated from the heart. The objective of this work can be accomplished with one's sati and panya, that is turning incessantly, together with one's application of one's diligent effort. As for the lay person, he can use this to apply in his daily work. It will also make his heart become calm and peaceful and be established with a basis and standards. One will not be one who just drifts around having no basis, but just going messing around. There is no other way that is such a perfect and ideal way as the way of the Buddha Sasana that was presented by the Lord Buddha, which either as a bhikkhu or as a lay person, one can take up and apply for the benefit of one's life. This is especially so with us who are the practitioners. What is the teaching of the Lord Buddha? This is really the fundamental point. What is our duty? What is the purpose of our going forth? We have to know what our intentions are. During the time of the Lord Buddha, people went forth for the purpose of washing away, eliminating, and uprooting the kilesas, which are antagonistic to the heart. The kilesas are also the cause of rebirth in the various realms of existence in the future, as well as about good and evil, right and wrong, and about happiness and suffering. That is why the Lord Buddha taught us to dig deep into our hearts. The heart is extremely important. When the body dies, it dissolves and decomposes, but the heart does not decompose. The heart does not die. But we don't know about this, and we are not able to see this if we don't practice. That is why the Lord Buddha taught us this way. What is the purpose of taking up the robe. We are ordained for this purpose. As we have said earlier, what is the duty and work of a samana, or the one who has gone forth? During the time of the Lord Buddha, the duty of those who went forth was to walk jhangama and sit in samadhi, bhavana. This is the undertaking of the bhikkhu. One who is intent on the uprooting of the kilesa due to the perception of harm of vata samsara must be one who develops sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort. One must build them up so that they become powerful. All of these things must be developed concurrently so that they can go together and gradually increase in their strength. Anything that is constantly nourished and taken care of will progress and grow steadily. So how can our citta not develop and grow if we are constantly nourishing it and taking care of it, following the way of Dhamma? This citta must and will develop and excel. The cittas of the Lord Buddha and the Savakas also used to be immersed in the kilesas for a long time, like all of our cittas. The kilesas and our kilesa were of the same type. How did they manage to get rid of their kilesas and attain to deliverance and become the sarana, a refuge for the world up to the present? The term Buddhang Saranang Gacchami does not refer only to the Buddha of our era. It refers to all of the Buddhas who became enlightened and taught the world in the past. The term Dhammang Saranang Gacchami refers to the Dhamma that has always and originally been the truth. All of the Buddhas who had attained enlightenment and come across Dhamma came across a Dhamma that has always existed as the truth in this world. Dhamma is the principle of nature and has always existed in this world since time immemorial. The term Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, we take refuge in the Sangha, refers not only to the Sangha of the Lord Buddha of our present era, but refers to all of the disciples of all of the Buddhas. All of them arose from the maya of filth and excrement of the kilesas, tanha, and asava. How did they manage to cleanse themselves of these things and become capable of being a noble or supreme one and become the sarana or refuge for all sentient beings to take up? This was due to their diligent effort. There are four fundamental points that the Lord exhorted us about. The first is chanda, which is satisfaction, being happy with one's duty and work of uprooting the kilesas. This is the duty of the bhikkhu, and this is the proper attitude of the bhikkhu. Virya is constant exertion, whether it is the inner or the external work, there must always be diligent effort and intention. Citta is to have close attention, being close and attentive to one's heart. This is one's duty and one's undertaking. If we have interest for our work and our pursuit. Then it will flow fluently and never go off the mark. Vimamsa is extremely important, for this is Panya. One must be thorough and circumspect in one's work, both the internal and the external work, especially in the practice of bhavana. When one is using one's Panya, one must use it to the fullest of one's ability and capacity. One must also be constantly nourishing one's Panya. One must be inclined to think and reflect about the various things, both the inner and the outer things. And one must turn them all into the Dhamma of Anicjang, Dukkhang, and Anatta. One must see them in this light. This is for the purpose of uprooting one's upadana, one's attachment and clinging, which are the kilesas, which are deeply embedded within the heart. One must get rid of them so that the heart can become free. These four dhammas are therefore extremely vital. All of you practitioners must not be heedless. You must always be vigilant and careful. Please don't ever think that the kilesas and ourselves will ever be good friends. They are like fire. Do you think that we can ever get intimate with fire? When you come into contact with fire, do you think that it is hot or not? And whenever we come into contact with fire, and it is so hot, then we know that this fire and us can never be intimate or get along together. It is the same way with the kilesas. Be it any kind of the kilesas, they are all like fire. If we really investigate to see the truth of the kilesas, then we must see them like fire. That is why the Lord called them rakakina, dosakina, and mohakina. If they are not harmful, why would the Lord call them fire? The Lord Buddha never spoke falsehood or stretched anybody's imagination. The Lord spoke in accordance with the truth. The problem is that we never think in the way of truth, but constantly go against the way of Dhamma, and are at the same time antagonistic or opposing to Dhamma. This is the kilesas that are opposing the Dhamma without ourselves having any knowledge of it, or having any intention on our part. But whether we have any intention or not, it is still the kilesas. It is similar to fire. Whether we have any intention of coming into contact with it or not, once we have come into contact with it, it will always be very hot. That is why we have to be very careful and cautious. We must not expose ourselves to the kilesas, any of them, for they are our enemy, and they are like fire. Wherever we are, whether we are standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, we must always be exerting ourselves and always be establishing our mindfulness, for this is our duty. We have now put our lives into Buddhang, Dhammang, Sanghang, Saranang, Gacchami. Ultimately, we have put our lives up for the sake of deliverance from all forms of dukkha. This is our undertaking. Everything else is well taken care of for us. We are very well provided with the requisites of living by the lay devotees who would like to make some merit out of their faith and conviction and their appreciation for what we are doing. We are not lacking in any of these requisites. What is lacking is in ourselves, whom we are now preparing to go into battle, to contend with the kilesas, tanha and asava, for the sake of virtue and victory, for the sake of conquering the kilesas, after which we can go out and teach this to the world. This is really the crux of the matter. If one cannot teach oneself, how can one teach the world? When one is lacking or inadequate in something, and when one teaches people, one's teaching will also be lacking and inadequate. When one is complete and perfect, then one's teaching to the world will also be complete and perfect. This is because one teaches out of one's practical experience, one's true knowledge and insight. This is when one has attained to complete knowledge and Dhamma. Then every aspect of one's teaching will be full of Dhamma and truth. On the part of the listeners, it will instill thinking and reflection and the arising of profit. Then this will be Dhamma. Dhamma has never done the slightest damage to the world. It is only the kilesas that do damage to the world and ourselves. That is why we have to pay great attention to this point. Whether we are standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, we should never be without mindfulness. Be vigilant and take care of your mindfulness. Sati is vital in the sphere of practice and in the field of exertion. No matter how much one investigates with Panya, one must depend on Sati as the director. We can see this when Sati and Panya are blended together as if they are one and the same thing. Then we will see very clearly that Sati and Panya cannot be separate from one another. The marvel and wonder of the Lord Buddha is due to the truth. The Dhamma within the heart of the Lord Buddha is also wonderful and marvelous. So when he teaches it to the world, it is also a great wonder. But when this Dhamma becomes mixed with filth and things without any substance, the Dhamma then appears as if it is worthless. And that is how it happens. We must therefore make ourselves worthwhile, so that we can be the proper vessel to receive the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, beginning at the levels of Sila and Samadhi, and gradually working up through the various levels of Panya, until arriving at the state of Vimutti, deliverance. Having attained to that by the penetration of truth, one will then become wonderful and marvelous within one's self, without having to depend on any supposition or proclamation. For this is a natural state of Dhamma, which is supreme and exalted. How can the heart not gradually become noble and exalted when it comes into contact with Dhamma, which is an exalted and supreme thing. Is this possible? Of course not. The heart will become noble and supreme. How can the citta that is constantly in a state of agitation, restlessness, and confusion find any peace and happiness? The reason why the citta cannot attain to calm is because of the kilesas that influence and disturb it all the time. And wherever one looks, one only sees trouble and affliction. One will not be able to look for any supreme or noble thing, either internally or externally. The world then appears gloomy and bleak to one, and one thinks that wherever one goes in the world, it will always be the same. Although actually, there are still good things around to be found. This is due to our ignorance, and that is why it is necessary to develop one's sati and panya, so that one can become wise and discerning. One must establish the citta with basis and principle. Speaking of developing samadhi, in whichever way or method one can attain to calm, there one must really concentrate one's effort in that particular method, doing it earnestly and totally, committing oneself into that work, and having mindfulness directing one's exertion. The Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is real, and the Lord Himself really exerted Himself. Why are we fooling around? Is this the way to follow the Lord Buddha? The Lord Buddha really exerted Himself and practiced, and really attained to the truth. But when we are fooling around in our practice, then our realization will be a foolish one. How can we get to know the truth? All that we will get to know are the fake things that constantly deceive us. But when we practice, then we must come across the true result. Samadhi cannot be beyond the ability of the citta. The citta is agitated because of the kilesas infiltrating, inciting, and disturbing it, mastering and controlling it. It is therefore necessary to concentrate one's sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort right at that point, by relentlessly and ceaselessly turning around and doing the work. How confused can this citta then get to be? Sati must coerce the citta to remain in the same place, keeping it with Dhamma and with the work that one is doing at that time. One must totally ignore life and death and time. One must be totally concerned in setting up one's awareness. One must not allow the world to appear in the awareness. All that must appear is just the Dhamma. Let there only be the awareness and Dhamma that are in contact with each other. For instance, if we are doing any parigama object, or focusing our attention at the breath, then let this be the only thing that is appearing within the awareness. Don't let the citta push out to think about the various things, thus bringing up confusion and agitation, because that is the way it will happen when the citta becomes absent-minded. The reason why the citta does not attain to calm is because of its absent-mindedness. It goes outside without ourselves being aware of it. If we just set up this understanding that at this moment the world does not exist, although it actually does exist, for this body, the element aggregate, still exists, for it is part of the world. At this moment, we do not let our thoughts about the world enter into the citta. Let there only be the citta and the Dhamma that are interacting with one another. Then how can the citta go elsewhere? It will definitely attain to calm. I have done this before, so I am not speaking without any substance, or just trying to show off. I have done the work in the world to the utmost of my ability of sati and panya, but I have not seen any kind of work that I myself experienced or saw to be anything like so burdensome and heavy as the work of developing the citta. From the beginning stage, when one tries to establish some calm and tranquility, the citta is extremely restless, worse than monkeys and gibbons, for it is constantly in a state of agitation, disturbance, and turbulence. Such is the way of the kilesas when they have control over the heart. But now we are going to take Dhamma into the heart so that it can take over the possession and so that the Dhamma can become the master of the citta. Let the Dhamma be permeated within the citta in place of the kilesas. So we have to put in all of our effort. Sometimes we have to even put our lives at stake. If we are going to die, then let it happen. Once we are born, wherever we go, we are destined to die anyway. Every sentient being has to die. Those who don't sit in samadhi bhavana also have to die. There isn't a single individual who can pass by or be exempted from the cemetery. Who can live forever in this world? Now, if we have to die in the battlefield while contending with the kilesas, then let us see it happen. If we don't die, then we must realize the truth. Then it will turn out that we do not die, but instead really realize the truth. Once the citta revolves and turns in towards itself, where is the home of all the kilesas, and also the same place where the Dhamma is found, then the result cannot be other than that the kilesas will be totally subdued. At least they will be restrained so that the citta can become calm, and so that the Dhamma, which is the calmness of the citta, will have the chance to manifest itself, and so that there will be brightness and coolness within the citta. This will be the result in which we will become amazed and experience wonder within ourselves. It will be the thing that will increase our satta and belief, and our conviction for the Buddha Sasana, as well as increasing our strength and energy in our exertion, and increasing our endurance and perseverance ability. These things will now become consolidated and strengthened, so that we can really contend and cope with the kilesas, and steadily conquer them as we progress along without any doubt. This is the way it will be like when we really exert ourselves. When it is the time to make the citta go into samadhi, one must totally concentrate on that samadhi. Don't pay any attention to the way of panya during such a time. When one wants to calm down or establish calm, one must be solely concentrated on just this effort. Let there be only this state of calm, which we call samatha. Or we can investigate the body by going up and down. This is what we call going on a sightseeing trip, a gammatthana sightseeing trip. The word gammatthana means the basis of work. The most suitable objects of this work for one who is desirous of being free from dukkha is the 32 parts of the body. If we want to investigate this body, going up and down, going on a gammatthana tour, this will not be wrong. It is alright for us to keep the citta within this vicinity, with sati or mindfulness directing our work. The citta cannot do otherwise than calm down. This is the level of samadhi, and in the beginning stages, this is the way to do it. Now let us speak about the level of panya. When the citta has gained enough calm, it will then be contented. It will not hanker after or be hungry for any other kinds of aramana. One must now take this citta, which is fully contented, to do the work of investigation, investigating the various aspects of Dhamma, like the 32 parts of the body, for example, both those that are found internally and those that are found externally. This is the proper way of doing it. One can investigate in the light of patikula, filthiness, or in the light of anicjang, dukkhang, or anatta. They are the basis of truth. Speaking of patikula, every one of us knows what it is, because we all have it. The Lord Buddha did not lie to us, but we tend to draw up the lies and deceptions within ourselves, even though they do not really exist. And these are the fake things and the falsehoods. That is why we call the kilesas fake and false. They are the chiefs of deception. Where are there such things as we call people? Look for them carefully. Let's look in the light of the truth principle taught by the Lord Buddha. Where is there such a thing as beauty and good looks? Where is there such a thing as refinement and aesthetics? All there is all over the body is just patikula, filthy things. It is all over the whole body, right through the external and right through the internal parts of the body. It is full of filth and impurity, and it is full of anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, in accordance with the Dhamma. It is not like the picture the kilesas have drawn up for us, which tell us that this part or that part is beautiful, and that it is good-looking, that it is I and that it is mine. This is just a way of going contrary to the Dhamma, opposing the Dhamma and contending with Dhamma. The way of the kilesas is always antagonistic and opposing to Dhamma. If our thinking and understanding is like this, then we are going against the way of Dhamma. By investigating it as particular, we must investigate to see the truth of this particular. Then it can be said that we are seeing according to truth, because that is just the way it is. Or one can investigate it to see it as anicjang, impermanence or change, dukkhang, suffering, or anatta, the negation of an entity, self or person in these formations, which are just made up of the four elements of earth, water, air, and fire. But truly, there is no such thing as a self, animal or people. This is the truth of Dhamma. When we investigate to see according to this truth, then the kilesas will have to disappear from our heart. All of the falsehoods will steadily disappear, and spontaneously will arise the truth, appearing gradually in stages. In the beginning stage, it will be the truth of particula. Then, once one has passed this particular stage, and when one investigates to see it as just the elements, then it will be just elements. When everything is just elements, how can one then be attached to them? If they are not pleasant or good-looking, how then can one be attached to these things, or have any misperception of them? They are not really beautiful, and we can see this very clearly. They are just like the pollution and excrement that we see along the road. Who would dare to step on this pile of excrement, since we already know that they are piles of excrement? This is how we can compare them. The citta will then not become involved or bothered with these things when it has seen their true nature. It is the same way with us when we see the piles of excrement along the road. We avoid them. And it is the same way with the citta. It will avoid these things. These are the means and techniques which will remove the thorns, which are the various kinds of kilesa that fool and deceive the heart, to perceive and comprehend according to the kilesa fabrication, and which is harmful to the citta. Thus we cannot find any peace and happiness, in spite of the fact that we are practicing bhavana. Truly, we are not doing any bhavana, but instead are becoming confused and involved with all the various kinds of affairs. The time when we have any sati or mindfulness is only just one instant, but the time when we are lacking in mindfulness and being dragged away by the kilesas to go into the various kinds of aramana must be at least 95% of the time. So how are we going to find any calm, happiness, and cool-heartedness when 95% of the time belongs to the kilesas and only 5% belonging to Dhamma? Is this enough to oppose and withstand the kilesas? We must therefore produce sati and panya. We must bring up the percentage of sati and panya to a very high level. It is the same way with the level of panya. We have to be really earnest. We have to investigate by differentiating the various parts. We have to investigate by analyzing and verifying the truth, using our own technique in doing this investigation. We must not remain idle when we have come to the stage in which we can investigate, so that it becomes panya. We must not wait for the advice and instruction of our teacher. We must not expect him to show us all the aspects of practice. The teacher will only point out the major or the fundamental points, but all of the details which have to be done with sati and panya are really our own work. Whatever we can investigate on our own will be our genuine possession. They are truly our possessions. When we investigate, we will see it truly and understand it truly. Wherever we truly understand, it will uproot and eradicate the fake and the false things. The more we know truly and understand, then the more the fake things will have to disappear. When we have completely understood and truly know about the truth of the body, then the upadana, the attachment, clinging and misperception will be uprooted, because the fake things and the falsehood that had the perception of this body as I and mine will have been withdrawn. Then the citta will withdraw within. This is the aspect of the body. Investigate it so that one can see it very clearly. It can be either the internal or external body. They all accord with Dhamma. So long as we investigate for the purpose of uprooting, for the purpose of true knowledge and insight, then regardless of whether we investigate internally or externally, it will always be correct. For they are all the magga, the path. But when we investigate wrongly or incorrectly, then both the internal and the external can be poisonous for us. The important point, or the essence, is really in the way of investigating. Sammāditti and sammāsaṅkappo is the utilization of our panya, investigating following the teaching of the Lord Buddha. It can be either internally or externally. It is the means of uprooting the kilesas of worry and attachment and confusion. When we are skillful in our investigation of both the internal and the external, this is when we can compare them and have no doubt about them. So, what then can the citta become attached to? The reason why the citta is attached to these things is because it is being deluded. It doesn't understand. Even when one listens to the teaching of the teacher, it will be merely memory. But the citta has not yet learned the truth. That is, the truth has not yet penetrated into the citta. Therefore, in the field of practice, we have to use the truth. we have to practice the citta. Then the result that will appear will be true knowledge and true realization. Once we have attained to true knowledge and realization, then the citta will let go, regardless of what the object may be. Once one has understood truly, one will let go of it. For instance, the body. Once one has realized the truth of this body, that is, one is clearly impressed by the truth of elements, or the truth of particula, or the truth of anicca, dukkha, or anatta, one will be really impressed with this truth. One will be equally impressed with all of this truth, without there being any contradictions. The citta will definitely withdraw from the attachment of the body, and this can be clearly seen without having to go and ask anybody about it. We will know all about the harm of our attachment, and we will know how oppressive and burdensome this attachment has been for us. We will know that it has always been oppressive to the heart. When Panya has investigated until seeing truly and knowing truly the truth of the body, the element aggregate, the truth of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, of all the parts of the body, and clearly realized and penetrated this truth, how then will the citta not withdraw from these things? It will definitely withdraw itself from them. Ceased or vanished is the upadana, or attachment. This is accomplished by the truth of Panya, which has investigated until really seeing the truth. It will then withdraw itself, and this is the end of the attachment. One is now liberated from one state. Vetana, Sanya, Sankhara, and Vijnana. These are the four Nama Khandas. They are the four groups or aggregates. The group of Vetana consists of Sukha, Dukkha, and Upekha Vetana, which are found with both within the body and the citta. Sanya is memory, recognition, or perception. Sankhara is thinking or concocting about the various things and affairs, both of the past and of the future, as well as of the present. This is Sankhara. Vijnana is that which receives the information or acknowledges the sense data, like when the sight comes into contact with the eyes, and the sound comes into contact with the ears. And when these things disappear, then the acknowledgement also disappears. This is called vijnana. They are merely conditions. There is no self, substance, or essence in them. Vetana is merely vetana. Sukha is just sukha. Dukkha is just dukkha. And neutral feeling is just neutral feeling. There is really no essence in them. They are one form of truth. When one has investigated to this point, how can the heart not be true? It is the heart that is being deluded by thinking that vetana is this, or vetana is that, or that vetana is inimical or harmful to it. This is because one is really looking for this sort of thing. So this things then consume and burn oneself. When Panya has fathomed into the truth of these three vetanas, sukha, dukkha, and neutral, and found that they are anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, one also investigates sanya, sankhara, and vijnana in the same way, until one becomes fully and deeply impressed within one's heart, and comes to full understanding the same way that one has understood the body. The citta will then withdraw from them. One will come to the end of attachment to all forms, all bodies, and one will also come to the end of attachment to the three vetanas of the body, sukha, dukkha, and neutral. This is with the exception of those within the citta, which one is still not capable of letting go of. There is still the vetana citta, or the vetana within the citta, and these are also sukha, dukkha, and neutral. Sanya is memory, recognition, or perception. Sankhara, concocting and thinking about good and bad. As soon as it begins to think, it will also cease right away, like a flash of lightning. Vijnana also arises and ceases. It arises just so that it can cease. It doesn't arise for any other purpose, not for any essence or substance, for any entity or self, or people or animals. It just arises and ceases, arises and ceases. What essence is there in them? When one has investigated until one becomes truly impressed with the truth of all these things, the citta will withdraw from them. One will withdraw from the five khandhas of rupa, vetana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. One will not be attached to them. They appear within the citta, but they are merely the conditions of the citta, and the citta is the citta. Although they might coexist, they are not one and the same thing, like men and women who are intermingled together. One can differentiate or tell the men apart from the women. One will know positively that those are rupa, vetana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, and that this is the citta. This is the way of realization or knowing in the field of practice. But one must investigate in the manner that has been discussed here. When one has let go of these things, then there will not be any attachment for them. This appear is the path or access of the gilesas. The gilesas that are the chief culprit, that are so deeply embedded within the citta. There is now no way for the gilesas to come out of the citta, for they now cannot come out through the path of vetana, sanya, sankhara, or vijnana. Neither can they go out through the path of sight, sound, smell, taste, or touch, for they now have been eliminated by panya. Panya now cuts the bridge that connects these things, gradually moving inwards until arriving at ourselves, which are the five khandhas. One keeps on steadily cutting off the access and moving slowly inward, closer and closer with the means of panya. in the manner that we discuss here, until we can see it very clearly and distinctively, that within the citta, there is just the citta and the kilesas. The kilesas are no longer found within rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, or vijnana, although they were there before. They used to hide within this khanda, claiming them as I and mine. When sati and panya have finally rounded up the kilesas and chased them into this point, right into the citta, once they have converged into the citta, then the investigation of the citta must now be the duty of sati and panya. One now no longer has any worry or concern for rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, or vijnana, but one must depend on the arising and ceasing of sankhara, the thinking process, as the means or the axis that will lead one to the real and genuine kilesa. This is avichara. It arises and ceases, and this we can see very distinctively. Now there is only this outstanding awareness, or knowingness, that stands out so distinctively apart, without being mixed with the khandhas, or any of their conditions. We will get to see this very clearly. This is the time when we will really get to know the citta. And although avichara exists within the citta, we don't know that it is avichara. This is because avichara is very subtle, sharp, and clever. Once he has arrived at this stage, the one who cultivates the citta will not be able to know that this stage is the kilesa, that this is avichara. If he doesn't have a teacher that has gone beyond this stage, and who can advise him on this aspect? One will see it as a solid bar of gold, although truly it is a fake bar of gold. For this reason, one now becomes dependent on this citta, which has now converged to one point, according to its nature, because it is bright, clear, outstanding, magnificent, spectacular, and marvelous. And it induces endearment and attachment for itself. This is what happens when one has let go of everything. One now becomes attached to the citta. One now clings to the citta, and this is the upadana within the citta. One now has the understanding that there is just the citta all alone by itself, without realizing that there is a tiger lurking inside it. This tiger is avichara. Even the level of automatic sati and panya, or mahasati and mahapanya, can still become deceived by the tune of avichara. This is because avichara is the master ruler of the three realms of existence. There isn't a single kind of kilesa that can be more sharp, subtle, and keen than avichara. The external manifestation of avichara in the coarse forms of the kilesas are lopa, dosa, and moha, greed, hatred, and delusion. Even with these coarser kinds of kilesas, we are deluded in them. If we were not deluded in them, how could we become so greedy, so full of hate and so deluded. This is because we think that these things are the truth, that they are real, and that they are something worth having. And for this reason, they appear all over the whole world of samsara. If we know according to the truth, then what is the use of being greedy, being hateful, and being deluded? And it is the same way with the citta, that is being deluded by itself. But this is on the most subtle level. It is therefore necessary to use panya to investigate into this state or this nature, in the same way that we investigated into rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. We have to investigate and analyze to see its nature. We have to observe and watch its activity or movement. As long as it is samuti of even the most subtle level, there is still some form of activity or movement. This activity that reveals the nature of anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta is always there. But it is very subtle in accordance with its subtle state. We have to investigate until we come to full and clear understanding, and then it will be destroyed by sati and panya. There will be nothing left behind. All the bravery and boldness, the grandeur and magnificence, the luminosity and brightness, and endearment and attachment will all dissolve away, leaving no residue behind. All that remains is the nature that knows. But this knowingness and the knowingness embraced by avicca are as different from one another as the sky is from the earth, or as stones from diamonds. This is the result of the work of the practitioner. This is the ultimate or the end result. This is the state of deliverance and the total destruction of all kinds of kilesas, which are the source of us taking birth and suffering, aging, illness, and death in all the various forms of existences. They are this very nature. Another factor that causes us to be born and die in the various states of existences, to be born in a higher form or a lower form, and to experience sukha and dukkha, depends on our karma vipaka. Avicca is the fundamental cause, and karma vipaka is the secondary cause. The kilesas are the factors that influence us to make karma, and the kilesas are avicca. This is what causes us to perform karma. Once we have performed karma, then we have to experience the result of this karma. This we call karma vipaka. And this is what causes all sentient beings to take birth and then die again and again. We have to probe and analyze, for we are among those that take up birth and then go through aging, illness, and death, like the Lord Buddha and all of the Savakas. Why do we have to wait for them to reveal this Dhamma and teaching it to us? Why are we not capable of learning it for ourselves? And if we are not going to believe in them, then who else can we believe in? If we are going to believe in ourselves, then we will remain thinking as we are now. When are we going to arise from this heap of dukkha that is influenced by the power of birth, aging, illness, and death? If we are not going to believe in the Lord Buddha, who else can we believe in? We have to believe in him in the way of practice by doing the investigation. We will get to see clearly the truth of the flow of the citta that is involved with the past and the future and with all the things that are the source of leading us to take birth and go through aging, illness, and death in the various realms of existence. And even if we have to take birth in the higher forms of existence, this is still existence, and it is still samuti, and it has dukkha permeated within it. The intensity of it corresponds to the level of the state of birth. This is not something good. We have to cut them off with the power of sati and panya until they are cut off within the citta. For this is the true source, which is avijja. This is the real and true source. We have to totally cut it off, and then we will see for ourselves whether we will have to die again or not, or whether we are going to take birth again or not. We will know this for ourselves. How did the Lord Buddha get to know it? He got to know it just this way. He realized it by the way of practice, and not by committing it into memory, learned from the text. He attained to this wisdom by way of practice. We have to practice until we can see it truly and know it truly. Then they will be totally cut off. Then where else can there be any more birth or form of existence? The principal source of birth has been totally destroyed, and one can see this very clearly with panya. There is nothing more left behind. All that is left and remains is the nature of the citta that is purified. So how then can one take up any more birth? One also knows, how can one cease or disappear? How can one disappear when one knows? Such is the way of the natural principle. How can it be wiped out? This is the truth, and the state of purity is the truth. How can we wipe out the state of purity, which is the citta? This is merely speculation and conjecture on our part. Let's get to the truth. The Lord Buddha taught the truth because he had realized the truth. All of these things are not beyond the ability of our citta. Let us probe and search until we find it. Once we have got to this stage, then the problem of the past will totally disappear. The questions of the future concerning what kind of birth or form of existence one will have to take, and whether one will experience sukha or dukkha, will also be totally cleared away. And as far as the present is concerned, one knows truly what it is. One truly knows about the present all of the time. There isn't any more attachment. Because once the kilesas have all been destroyed, then there cannot be any more attachment. Even the state of purity is not attached to itself, for this is not the kilesas. Wherever the kilesas are, they will lead us to become attached. The intensity of our attachment will be equal to the intensity of the kilesas. They will always lead us to have attachment. And even when they are in the citta, they also make us become attached to the citta. When we have totally eliminated them from the heart, from the citta, until there is nothing left in it, then there will be nothing left to be attached to. All there is just the state of purity. No attachment can be found, for the cause of attachment is no longer there. There are no kilesas, and the kilesas are the cause of attachment. They are no longer there. And this is where one gets to know. This is sanditiko that has been constantly challenging us to experience it from the first day of the Lord Buddha's enlightenment and through the days of his teaching the Dhamma, right on down to the present. This Dhamma is never behind the times. It is the Majjhima Patipada that is in the midst of suitability. It is always appropriate. It is sanditiko, which the practitioner will get to see for himself. Because these things are found within each individual, and the way to get to know and understand them has already been taught. This is called the Majjhima Patipada, beginning with Sammaditti and ending with Samma Samadhi. This is the core of Dhamma, the core of the Patipada. We have to take this up and practice and follow the way. And where is this thing, this way? The Lord called it the Magga, the path of practice, the instrument of overcoming dukkha, the tool of destroying the kilesas. It is none other than this Majjhima Patipada. You must really exert yourselves. We are the practitioners, and we must not go down to defeat. We must not remain idle, doing nothing, for this place is not a pig's pen. You must really be earnest in your practice. The Lord Buddha was not the chief of the pig feeders or farmers, and the Sasana Dhamma is not the pig's feed. The Lord Buddha really had to go through fire and water to come across this Dhamma. And he taught this Dhamma to the world so that they could attain to true insight and knowledge. We must follow the Dhamma principle of the Lord Buddha. And let's see what the result will be, if it is not what the Lord Buddha told us it would be. It cannot be otherwise. You must really commit yourself in the practice. That is all that you have to do. The kilesas are sharp and keen. There is nothing else in this world that is sharper and keener than the kilesas. But when they embrace anyone, they make that person foolish. But the kilesas themselves are sharp and keen, and very clever and crafty. That is why they are capable of ruling the world. It is the power of the kilesas that rules over the vatajaka. Don't think that the ruler of the vatajaka, the wheel of birth, aging, illness, and death, is anyone else but the kilesas. If we want to get to see this and understand it clearly, then we have to dig into our hearts in the way that we have discussed here. We will come to know and understand right at this place. When every kind of kilesa has been eliminated from the heart, then who else can be the ruler? There will not be any more ruler. One will have complete freedom. Therefore, please be intent and determined, and really put up your effort in your practice. End of Detsana.